Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's TOC podcast. I'm Joe Weichert, chair of O'Reilly's Tools of Change Conference. And if you haven't noticed, the TOC team is now producing one webcast per month and a video podcast pretty much every week. It's our way of helping you connect with the publishing community. You can learn more about this programming as well as register for TOC New York at our website, toccon.com. Today's podcast features Dan Gilmore. Dan teaches digital media entrepreneurship at Arizona State University and is the author of a number of books, including his latest one, MediActive, which he self-published last December. Now, I asked Dan to join us because he's an author with experience in the traditional publishing and self-publishing world. So, Dan, welcome to this TOC podcast.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So, Dan, as I mentioned earlier, you're one of a growing number of authors who has worked in both the traditional and self-publishing areas. And your most recent project, MediActive, was published through Lulu. So why did you decide against a traditional publisher and go the self-publishing route on this one?
Well, long story that ended up being that the publisher that offered a deal didn't want to do a Creative Commons license. And the publishers that do Creative Commons wanted a different book. So because Creative Commons for me is kind of non-negotiable, I decided that give it a try this way.
So let's talk for a minute about Creative Commons licensing. Yeah, obviously you're a big fan of it. Can you tell us why you prefer it?
Well, it's for me it's about publishing books is about the idea is more than the idea of making a lot of money on it. And turns out there's no conflict there. The first book, We the Media, which of course O'Reilly published, was Creative Commons, was available for free download pretty much from the day it went into bookstores. And this is now more than 7 years ago, and I'm still getting royalty checks every quarter. So that tells me that the Creative Commons model seems to work on the making money side, not just on the getting the ideas outside. But what I do and the kinds of books I do tend to be the things that the more the ideas are out there, the more other kinds of things happen, including speaking gigs, consulting gigs, things like that. So for someone who does books like me, it's I think it's kind of crazy not to do it this way.
So you mentioned one publisher that you had spoken with about MediActive that just wasn't keen on Creative Commons licensing. Is that pretty consistent out there, or are you finding more publishers are opening themselves up to it?
Well, my agent, David Miller, told me this was likely to happen, that the publishing industry in general is not is not into Creative Commons, and doesn't there's a growing understanding of it, but that it's so contrary to their DNA basically that for the most part they're just not going to be interested. And In this case, it was funny. This was a New York publisher, a very, very good one. I very much wanted to do it, but they wouldn't even talk about it. Even when David went back to them and said, "Okay, how about this? We'll reduce the advance to $0," and even then, they were just not going to talk about it. And wow. That's, of course, David warned me that that's what would happen. So.
Yeah, you know, to me, it sounds very similar, and what I see in the industry is the same resistance to DRM free world, right? So there's just this fear, uncertainty, and doubt of what this mm-hmm. change could bring to the revenue stream. Is that yeah. fair?
I think that's entirely fair, and there are probably some kinds of books, not probably, I'm sure of it, there are some kinds of books that a Creative Commons license is probably a bad idea for the author and for the publisher. But I can't think of too many where that's the case. And it seems to me that we're in a whole different ecosystem of publishing now, that where if we don't experiment this way and think about books as part of a more holistic publishing slash marketing slash etc. Effort for the ideas and the author, then we're missing something.
Yeah. So do you have any examples of where you think Creative Commons would be a bad option for an author and a publisher?
Well, I doubt that Stephen King is going to use Creative Commons. And I think the more market power an author has, probably the more likely Creative Commons is not the best approach for that author. But I don't know. I just think that we have to experiment more with it. And I don't take for granted that it's always best. But I do take for granted that more publishers and authors should be trying it.
Okay. So let's switch back to that self-publishing project you did, Media Active. Are there two or three key lessons that you learned along the way by self-publishing?
There would be at least three or four key lessons, one of which is that I've had to learn about some stuff that I am profoundly not interested in. There's a reason that authors like to have publishers. There's a lot of work that is distracting from the work of the writing. However, I've learned a lot, so it's been worth doing it on many grounds. But I think the lessons that I've taken from it are several. One is that you can get a very, very professional result by farming out the key pieces of this to people you trust, including, in my case, I had the good fortune of having a former newspaper editor of mine named Tom Stites, who is a very, very fine editor. His track record is extraordinary. He was willing to come into the project and look at it very, very hard as an editor. And since most big publishers don't really edit much anymore, that was something I needed and wanted. And he followed my instructions, which was basically, don't let me off the hook. Really make me follow what I'm trying to do here. And made the book infinitely better. I went to Lulu, which I think is a terrific operation for many things. For example, the interior, they did a nice cover. And I bought a package of services from them. I did the sort of the EPUB stuff and the Kindle stuff myself. I'm not sure if I would do that again. That was fascinating to learn, and it's just software, so no big deal. But I would probably want to find some different method there. And as I work on version 2, I'm certainly rethinking all of the steps that I took. Another lesson is really the same one that every author knows about any book, no matter who publishes it, unless they're really famous. And that is that you have to do your own marketing. The new O'Reilly project that you call Every Book is a Startup could not be more true. And it was fascinating to learn about that. So, again, I've been sort of dipping my toes into a lot of pieces of the publishing world and finding that some of them I kind of wish I had not had to do because they were distractions from the work I do, but they were also part of the work I do. And in going into the future, this is fundamentally the work I do. So I'm learning.
Yeah, and I think some of the points you made are pretty common with others that I've spoken with who have self-published. And, it's not maybe the perfect model for everybody, but if you go into it with the right expectations, it can be terrific. And, mm-hmm. and with that in mind, you mentioned, too, about having to do a lot of your own marketing, if not all of your own marketing. And I would say that over the last 5 years in particular, even in the traditional book publishing space, we as publishers have asked authors to do a lot more of their marketing than ever before. Would you agree?
Yeah, sure. And authors should do a lot of the marketing. It's not like it's absurd to imagine that the author is off in a corner in, you know, all pristine and not part of that process. In fact, every blog post I make, every, you know, everything I do has some relationship to the work I do in a general sense, and it's all involved. It's all holistic. It's part of what I do and who I am. So I don't see it as a conflict. I see it as kind of just an extension of other things.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to look at it. But it's still amazing to me to see how many authors out there, experienced and new, that don't really get that. So it's a little disappointing. Let's talk for a minute about self-publishing from a traditional publisher's point of view. There have been publishers like Thomas Nelson is probably a great example, who started up their own self-publishing imprint. It's called Westbow Press. And there have been a couple of others that have done the same thing. I think when you talk to them about this, they look at it as a way of sort of expanding their reach, maybe using a different brand, but also having a hand in the game of self-publishing. Do you think that's a smart thing for traditional publishers to do?
I'm not expert enough on the inside of your business to be sure of this, but I would imagine that if it's done right, and that is, if it's not put together as a throwaway vanity press, but rather something where you actually do exert some editorial, if not control, influence, and where you say no to some projects, mm-hmm. because they don't meet your standards,
right.
then I think it's a fine idea. And in fact, I think traditional publishers should be putting together different kinds of packages, even for the authors who they want to keep publishing in a regular way, to say, well, look, let's bend this a little bit and see how it works. If you do some of this and we do some of that, I strongly feel that the that the day of the top down hierarchy needs to change in any event. So I would imagine this would be a terrific venture for a traditional publisher that had the right expectations and that came at it with the right attitude, and the right attitude is one that where no one ends up feeling taken by the other. And I can easily imagine how a pure vanity press thing could lead to misunderstandings, to put it mildly.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And of course, you know, you're not alone out there, being part of a growing number, I think, of traditionally published authors who have now gone into the self-publishing space as well. What do you think traditional publishers need to do to avoid losing authors to self-publishing?
I'm not sufficiently deep into the publishing world to have a good answer for that, but my impression is that the traditional publishing industry is even more risk averse than it used to be, and that there's a fundamentally the divide between the established author and the new author, or the A-list author and the down the alphabet list author, is the gap there is growing, it looks to me, not shrinking, and that there may be no alternative. So that seems like the marketplace may be pushing this anyway, and it simply makes sense. It's the pieces of publishing as a process are getting splintered in lots of ways that give authors a lot more choice. Not that it's all, you know, a perfect situation for authors, but it's certainly easier to do this than it's ever been. But there's still plenty of ways that it could be easier for the author.
Mm-hmm. So now with the experience in both camps behind you, why would you pick one over the other, self-publishing versus traditional publishing?
Well, I'm in kind of a weird middle ground on this because even though in the U.S. it was self-published, David is still working to sell it in other countries. And in fact, we had a very nice traditional deal from Japan where it came out a couple of months ago. And actually, the great irony is that the only place in the world where it's in a hardcover edition is in Japan, not in the U.S. But Asahi, a large company there, put it out and treated it really well and with a nice advance. And so I'm still a very traditional in a very traditional arrangement there, and there are conversations about other places. So, you know, given that I'm certainly not the expert on doing that stuff, I'm glad that I have this terrific agent to do things of that sort. And that experience, again, reminds me of, you know, what's good about having a publisher, because the translator and the editor and, you know, the weight of a big and serious media company means something. And they, you know, I saw it on a bookstore shelf next to some, you know, really major titles, including translations. I was weirdly next to the George Bush book in one place, which I'm not sure whether to be pleased or unhappy about that. But it was, so again, that was good. The part about doing it myself means, you know, I learn a lot, and it's also much faster. Although they were very quick in Japan, from the time that we signed until the time it came out was a matter, including the translating, was a matter of, I think, 4 months, tremendously quick. The ability to move quickly is great. The ability to think about other things that would probably take negotiations with a regular publisher. For example, working on various EPUB editions that will have different things in them, like videos, and we just did lesson plans for the book. Former students of mine worked on with me of a it's a WordPress installation that basically you can go to WordPress.com, create a blog, and then import a file we give you, and you have the MediaActive lesson plans already done and ready for students to start blogging right there. And the teacher's got all the stuff ready to go. We're in the final stages of testing that, but it looks really good. I think that stuff would be harder to do just contractually with a regular publisher, because these things all seem to get negotiated.
Yeah.
But the speed of the velocity from start to finish is higher. The most important thing that changes when you do it yourself is that when it's done, you publish it. Boom. That's it. It's not like months and months. And again, that has a downside too. If you expect you're going to get reviews, I recognized on this one that I was not going to get any reviews in any American newspapers. Actually, since We the Media didn't get any reviews in American newspapers except for my own, despite your good efforts at O'Reilly, I wasn't expecting it anyway. Mm-hmm. But you do foreclose yourself pretty much from getting reviewed, because the traditional press in America still has the belief that a self-published book is not a real book. And, you know, I kind of regret that, because it's stupid. Yeah. And I would prefer to see my former colleagues not be stupid. But that's their choice. If they want to say, okay, the world is still flat, by God, they're welcome to say the world is still flat and just deal with it. Right. So, you know, everything's trade-offs, but I think the trading that I made came out well. That, you know, in a perfect world, you want a publisher that totally understands you and that works really fast, and where everything goes swimmingly. But, you know, that's a highly idealized world that's not very much true anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting, though, that your self-publishing project, MediActive, is kind of a hybrid, because for the translation, you've got a traditional publisher involved in, right?
Yeah, and a traditional agent who, right. I can't say enough about David, because he runs a small boutique agency in the Boston area called the Garamond Agency, which authors will recognize Garamond from a font. He's David Weinberger's agent and a few other people who I hugely respect. And in fact, David introduced me to him. And when the project crashed with traditional publishers, David said he would stay with it anyway, because in his words, he knew that his life was going to be changing in the next few years, and that this would be something to go to school on for himself as well. And so on my calls to Lulu and, you know, in looking at how to do all this, he was very much part of it. And so it reminds me that we're all in a changing ecosystem. We all have to adapt.
Yeah, makes sense. Last question I have for you, Danny. You've mm-hmm. done some rich content experimentation with MediActive, and I suppose the scenario you described earlier with that WordPress project is part of this. But can you tell us more about what you've got going on there and what you have planned for the future?
Well, in my copious free time, I'm actually late now on version 2. I had hoped to have it done before the end of this year, and I won't make it. But I want to update it significantly. There's some errors in the book that I want to fix, that I must fix. There's a number of things I think that I want to tweak. And one of the issues was whether to slipstream stuff or not, and that turns out to be more difficult than I had imagined. At Amazon, for example, one of the outlets for this is their Create Space mm-hmm. Publishing, and they know that this is stupid at Amazon. They actually are. They agree that this is stupid. But if you change a comma, the book is taken off the Amazon shelf until you have sent the new manuscript through and then allegedly proofed a proof copy. They said they're changing it. I haven't seen it change yet, but I should be able to make fixes in a slipstream kind of way. And as of a month ago when I checked, I couldn't do that. So that's crazy. Easier with Kindle version. It's easier with EPUB, obviously. But even there are these weird delays. So I'm puzzled by that. But some of the experiments I'm thinking about are not just a new version, but I think I'm going to break up pieces of the book into some Kindle singles. Because some of the individual chapters stand really well alone with some rewriting and some expanding. I'm not going to just sell chapters without, I'm not going to just say, okay, this chapter is a dollar. That would, I want to take a chapter and expand it, put some graphics in it, especially now that Kindle books are about to change significantly due to the Amazon tablet. It means you can do a much richer book experience in the Kindle format than you could before. And that will apply to EPUB too, but it's a little harder to do sales-wise. So the finding an equivalent marketplace for a bunch of EPUB singles, if you will, is harder than with Kindle. They make it really easy. So that's another way to do it. I want to get some videos. I talked to a lot of people and got some great videos. Well, they're crappy production value videos, but there's good content in the people where I've quoted them in the book, but you know, here they are saying it out loud. That's kind of cool. And with more depth to what they were saying. Quotes are always just a subset. One thing I'm working on slowly, very slowly, with a former student is to put a game into one of the EPUB versions. And I think the game will be something along the lines of helping a reader figure out how to detect things that are false or that are wrong in what they read. Howard Rheingold calls this crap detection. And I think a game that helps you through the process of crap detection could be really interesting, and I've never seen one.
Yeah.
And as part of this book, it makes perfect sense. So a lot of what I'm looking at is aimed at a market that I don't have a lot of yet, but I've got some, and I want to get more, which is in schools, because I think what I've done is really very much suitable for schools. Hence the lesson plans and other things. One final thing I would mention that this came as kind of a surprise to me, but it was a pleasant one. A university called Queen's University in North Carolina, their journalism and communication school has taken on as pretty much its mission to be to bring an advanced form of media literacy to the Charlotte, North Carolina community as fundamental mission to the school, among their other missions. And so they called up back in the summer and were asking about what the cost of the book would be. And of course I can do really good price cutting at bulk because I just do an order and it's done. But I asked them, well, do you need a print edition? They said, well, we could do PDFs. What do you want to do? And universities are pretty pretty careful about honoring copyright, which I really like. And this is Creative Commons copyright, but if people are assigning it to classes, that's a commercial use, and they really should pay for it. So I suggested to them, well, would you be interested in doing a site license of the ebook, where the first X number of copies are this many dollars per copy, then the next I think it was the first 40 were at one price, then the next 210, so up to 250 would be at X minus a couple of dollars, or I forget the exact numbers right now. And then after 250, it would be totally no charge for anyone on campus who wanted to use it. And they said, yeah, let's try that. And so they did their first order. They said, okay, we'll do 52 to start. And it sounded like they knew what they wanted, and then they just ordered another bunch at the lower price. And I very much hope that they get to the 250 and go on there, because that's a good deal for me. It's a good deal for them. It's a great deal for them. And when after this process, I suddenly realized I was in the software business.
Yeah.
Which had not occurred to me until that moment.
Right.
In addition, and of course software is publishing, but a different kind. But when you're talking electronic publishing, you're in a very different thing than the world I grew up in. And if I were a better marketer, I would be trying to push this deal to lots of other universities. But this is, again, the kind of thing where, you know, a sales team with a traditional publisher could do a much better job. So some things are better, some things are not as good, but I'm pretty happy with where it's going.
Well, the other thing, though, that I find really interesting about that model is, like you said, it's good for both parties, right? But if they do take it to the max, where you get the full payment at $250 or whatever it is, and they've invested that much, and they know that the 250 first copy or access is free, it's basically encouraging them to get it in as many hands as possible, which is good for everybody as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you know, at the end, if you know 1/100th of the universities in the United States, which would be a lot, if you know 1 in 100 were to do this, I'd end up making fairly decent amount of money.
Yeah,
not retire rich money, but it would make the project's already in the black. That's something that I'm happy about. And that's partly because of the advance from Japan. But and I'm not including the time I spent writing. But I was writing this kind of, you know, when I didn't have other things I had to do, which is how I do pretty much everything. And The being in the black feels really good, and you know, I'm a big fan of authors getting paid for their work. People should not misunderstand my advocacy for Creative Commons as anything but a way to improve the author's chances of A, getting the ideas out into the world, and B, having a much better opportunity to make a living on those ideas. And it's one reason I keep thinking that there's a need for an entirely new business model for the kinds of things that I do and that other authors who do nonfiction of this type, because it makes no sense to me. This is a vestige of traditional business practices, that there is a separate agent, publisher, PR, whatever you want to call it, marketing, speaking agent, consulting manager, etc. In the kinds of things that I and many of my friends do, the book is one component of a significantly more complicated ecosystem of ideas, and they're not aligned in a financial way, except in a kind of sketchy, well, if one works, the others are helped way. I think that there ought to be a much more coherent business entity that supports the author and the ideas, that includes the publisher, the various agents, and the marketing, something that publishers take a stab at by having speaking bureaus, but don't really do well, and that, you know, there's a lot of different expertise that needs to be combined. So if I was 20 years younger, I'd be probably starting this business, because I know it's needed.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, Dan, you've got a lot of really interesting things planned for next year with this project. And I'm keenly interested in hearing more about how they play out, and I know our audience will be as well. So maybe we could plan on reconnecting at some point next year and talking further about the results. How does that sound?
That sounds good, and it actually, by having said that I'm doing this in public, it means I better actually do it.
That's right. We're going to commit you to it. So Dan Gilmore, thank you so much for being part of today's TOC podcast.
Glad to be with you.